America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation where a great step is being taken for inclusivity, for sensitivity, for, well, wokeness, basically. A great step in that direction on behalf of M&Ms. Now, try to imagine, what do you think the problem has been with M&Ms? I mean, if you go inside, the candies are all, well, they're all different colors, right? And isn't that the way it's supposed to be? You have a rainbow array, and chocolate is certainly something that ought to be unifying. But how do you make M&Ms more inclusive? We will get to that on the Michael Medved Show. There's also a somebody who just got arrested, and it's kind of an unpleasant thing. He got arrested for messages that he sent, and stuff that he put on Craigslist, actually. Now, is that a violation of freedom of speech? The Justice Department on Friday charged a Texas man with publicly calling for the assassination of Georgia's election officials. How's that work out? We will get to that story on the Michael Medved Show. And also, people are talking about, oh, will this be the last time that we celebrate an anniversary for Roe v. Wade? Is it the end of Roe v. Wade? Is this going to make America an outlier? Well, the actual truth is that America is an outlier on the issue of abortion. Why? Because we are just about the easiest major country, certainly the easiest major advanced country, when it comes to people wanting to get abortions. And what is going to happen is, if Roe v. Wade is overruled or changed, or if the decision comes back, it's going to make America more like the rest of the world, not more different. We can prove that to you coming up. And first, we were talking about Eric Adams and New York and the ongoing drive, I think, for a lot of people in a lot of cities across the country to get tough on crime. And I think it's a major factor in the fact that all of the polls about the upcoming election coming up this November are tilting toward Republicans. Why? Because Republicans don't do stuff like this. This is a flashback from 2020, where the then mayor, Bill de Blasio, ultra-Democrat, congratulated himself on his effort to empty the jails and to put criminals back on the streets where, in his point of view, they belong. This is de Blasio at an amazing press conference back in 2020, clip 12.
We now have fewer people in our jails than any time since World War II, and we are safer for it and better for it.
Okay. Why are people applauding the idea that we are safer for it and better for it? You're not safer for it. There is no way that you can add up the situation with crime in New York and compare it to the situation pre de Blasio. It does make a difference. And yes, if you put criminals in jail, it's true that they may not be rehabilitated. Sometimes they are. Often they're not. And yes, we should do better with rehabilitation in our penal system. But the one thing that you know of is that if somebody's in jail, then if you're a civilian, you're not endangered by that person. And it seems to me that's worth remembering. Something else where it's not going to lead to jail, but it is a growing battle. And I think it's interesting that right now people are writing about it and talking about it. And they there's a piece by Juan Williams, which is fascinating. And the title is, and this is his column in The Hill, it's Trump versus McConnell for the GOP's future. Is he talking about Mitch McConnell running for president? No, he is not. Don't worry. He says, are you looking for a knockout? The heavyweight fight for control of the Republican Party before the midterms now has both sides throwing serious leather, writes Juan Williams. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican Kentucky, landed a big punch against former President Trump recently when John Thune, senator from South Dakota, agreed to run for another term. And with Thune staying by his side as the minority whip, there is less chance of Trump's loyalists pushing McConnell out as the top Republican in Washington. And by the way, Trump says repeatedly he wants to do that. He says we have to get rid of Mitch McConnell. I just heard him say it on the 15th of January when he spoke in Florence, Arizona. And he's doing another rally, I believe, next week in Texas. It might be 2 weeks from now. In any event, with Thune staying by the side as minority whip, there's less chance of Trump's loyalists pushing McConnell out as the top Republican in Washington. But Trump earlier rocked McConnell when Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican South Carolina, signed up to be Trump's tag team partner. Graham said he can't vote for anyone, read that as McConnell, to head the GOP's Senate caucus if that person can't have a working relationship with President Trump and prosecute the case for Trump policies. Trump doesn't have enough Republicans, however, who are lining up with him to defeat McConnell for majority leader. This fight is no sideshow, says Juan Williams. It has big consequences for the future of the Republican Party and America's future as a democracy. McConnell is the one man remaining in the way of a complete Trump takeover of Republicans in Congress. Trump is already endorsing congressional candidates in GOP primaries. He has a big campaign chest to offer candidates who pledge to support him, and Trump maintains a grip on the conservative echo chamber media, where all voices are expected to pass a litmus test by repeating Trump's lies about the election fraud in 2020. But wiser GOP strategists know the competition among Trump imitators creates divisions in the Republican base and hurts the party's chances in the year's midterm races. I think that's true, by the way. And he says, McCarthy's strategy of being obsequious to Trump is not looking good. He is still threatened by Trump supporters who think he needs to be more like the defeated president. We know that Kevin McCarthy has a problem in our conference, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene said in November. He doesn't have the full support to be speaker. Well, we'll see about that. In any event, talking about the fight between Trump and McConnell, there's also an ongoing fight, which might be more long-term and more impactful even for the Republican Party, is the fight between Trump and DeSantis. We will get to that. Some comments from MSNBC. What do you think? Who do you think they like better, Trump or DeSantis? They actually don't like either one of them at all. But we will get to that, and we will get to the shocking truth about abortion law, the United States, and where we stand relative to the rest of the world, even if we do see a rollback of Roe v. Wade. We will be right back on the MedVed Show, 1-800-955-1776.
You are speaking truth,
MedVed.
And this came in from John in Vista, California. He says, I agree with Newt Gingrich that there needs to be some investigation of the pursuit of the Capitol riot trespassers. But announcing it like it is some main focal point seems to be politically foolish. Yeah, he basically said, we're going to take over the House, we're going to take over the Senate, and then we're going to use that House and Senate takeover. First thing he talks about is going after the people who have been investigating, and the Justice Department really hasn't been tremendously active on this. There are local prosecutors who have been more so. But in any event, Newt clearly says that there should be people who wind up in jail for prosecuting innocent people. Now, if you can actually demonstrate that somebody has knowingly, for political reasons, gone after people known to be innocent and fake things, and of course that should be a criminal offense. But I don't think that there's any serious person who believes that that's happening. Because, frankly, most of the people who have been prosecuted for being active in this riot were caught on tape. And many of them, there's a big piece in the New York Times today about how many people are proud of it. There are 163 people who apparently were present and who are running for office this year. And some of them are using footage of themselves going into the Capitol building as a basis for winning Republican primaries. I certainly hope not. But that's where we are. In any event, John goes on, and it's a smart email. He says, what does need investigation is this. Anyone who is not suspected of assaulting police or similar violence should have been ticketed and released. Any case where someone has been held long-term but has no serious charges, like assaulting police, is outrageous. And yes, people responsible for that should themselves be facing consequences. Otherwise, where is the equal application of the law? Look, the equal application of the law is, I don't think there are any people in there who are not involved in violent crimes or property crimes to destruction of property and destruction of federal property, especially when you're talking about the Capitol building in the United States, is kind of serious. But there's nobody being held without bail, I don't believe. Even the suspected ringleaders. And their bails, their negotiations, there's trying to get cooperation for further. And even the biggest penalties so far, I believe the biggest sentence that anyone's gotten so far has been 42 months, which is, a chunkier life. It's going to be serious. But to say that the people have been held in solitary confinement or being held without bail, that has not been the case. There's also been a number of organizations, and this is their constitutional right. I wouldn't support these organizations, but that's fine. Many people do, that are trying to provide free legal representation for these January 6th rioters. Look, the question here would be, talking about these people as political prisoners, try to imagine for just a moment that it had been, as a lot of people suspect that it was, it's not true, but had it been Antifa, or had it been BLM, or had it been somebody on the left who did what was done by people on President Trump's side or acting in the name of President Trump. Do you think that those people on the left, if they had come in and battled police officers and attacked police officers and smashed windows and broken through doors and forced Congress members to evacuate the building for their safety, who interrupted a legal proceeding, perfectly legal proceeding of the United States government, do you think that it would be appropriate to persecute the individuals? Yeah, I do. And I think they would have been persecuted. By the way, statistically, only about one-tenth of those who've been arrested, 71 individuals, have received their criminal sentences, while the rest are waiting for their trials or haven't yet reached plea agreements. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia, 31 defendants were sentenced to periods of incarceration, with longer prison terms for those who engaged in violence or threats. So far, the median prison sentence for the January 6th rioters is 45 days. Yeah, so it's a month and a half. An additional 18 rioters have been sentenced to periods of home detention, while most sentences have included fines, community service, and probation for low-level offenses like illegally parading or demonstrating in the Capitol, which is a misdemeanor. Okay, so we can put that in context. We can also put in context what MSNBC thinks is the real battle in the Republican Party, not the battle between Trump and McConnell, as Juan Williams suggests, but the battle between DeSantis and Trump, who Tiffany Cross of MSNBC compares to the battle between Freddy and Jason, two slasher movie killers. Listen.
We have to talk about Freddy versus Jason, and that is, of course, DeSantis v. Trump in 2024. It is very frightening to see how obnoxious these two men compete with each other. And DeSantis is going out of his way to appeal, like, no, I'm the bigger racist. I'm the most inept. I'm the one that you want to like, Republicans. This bill, backed by DeSantis, would prohibit Florida's public schools and private business from making white people feel discomfort or guilt. Now, the white is silent. He says making anyone feel discomfort or guilt for their race, sex, national origin. And it received its first approval Tuesday in the State Senate Education Committee. White feelings seem to always trump actual history and facts. And DeSantis knows that is a thing with his party and is leaning into it. And I'm really concerned that people who lack intellectual curiosity but make up for it in supporters of systemic racism and white supremacy will look at him as their new champion.
Okay, this is outrageous, of course, because, look, we've had this whole discussion before, and this was a Democratic thing in California where they were pushing the idea of self-esteem. Is it appropriate to try to prevent making kids feel guilty or less than or somehow the burden of a history for a group that they may be part of? Is that something that ought to be done in school? We will get to that and more coming up on The Medved Show. 1-800-955-1776.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
On the Michael Medved Show, the idea of teaching our children to feel guilty, apologetic, embarrassed, ashamed of their country and our country's history is probably one of those things that contributes to the fact that there are such measurable increases in depression, particularly among teenagers, to lack of confidence, to sometimes free-floating rage. Mental health generally is not doing well in the United States. And there really is an indication that politics happens to be part of that burden and part of what goes on. If you have people saying all the time, and you're hearing voices just coming at you from everywhere that say democracy is under threat, we may be all dying because of climate change, that race relations could lead to a new civil war. Now, whether or not any of that stuff is true, I don't think it is, by the way, but with all of that in the air, of course, the negativity is absorbed, particularly by young people. And this is not a controversy that is artificial. It is a controversy that's profound. I think it's one that goes to the very essence of who we want our children to be, what we want it to be, mean to be an American. Now, being an American shouldn't mean you're a jingoist. And by the way, the term jingo comes from the fact that people, comes from the fact that people used to say, by jingo, we're the best country there is, or by jingo, we can beat any other country in the world. Well, by jingo, we should feel proud of our country. And feeling proud of our country has a better impact both on the country and on the individuals who live here than feeling embarrassed about America. No, not a made-up controversy, but Catherine Rampell, who's a good writer for The Washington Post, appears on CNN. And she says that conservatives are making up arguments that aren't really there. Listen, clip six.
Right? The goal of this kind of coverage is to freak people out, to cause them to live in fear. Ironically, a lot of the fear-mongering is about the things that are not actually mortal threats, and then there's ignoring the things that are mortal threats. You know, COVID isn't real, and climate change isn't real. I would argue that, to me anyway, those things are a little bit scarier or have been scarier at various points in the past couple of years.
Right.
And instead, it's about the immigrant hordes and the senile president and critical race theory brainwashing your kids and things that are, you know, if not just exaggerated, invented out of whole cloth.
Mm-hmm. And invented out of whole cloth? Critical race theory isn't invented out of whole cloth. It's there. There are people that you can talk to who work in companies where they hire sensitivity trainers and they hire people to do basically critical race training. And it's supposed to help people. And then you talk about scaring people. One of the things that is scary to people is they are trying to get across the idea that the United States is with a decision pending on Roe v. Wade and on abortion law, that the United States is absolutely going out on this lonely voyage, the only country in the world where they are going to ban abortion at all. And again, with so many other countries all around the world being far more enlightened and understanding, we are going to be an outlier that actually cracks down on women and denies them this fundamental right, in quotes. And there's a piece, and I was shocked to see it because it's such a fair piece and it's so well done. It's by Claire Kane Miller and Margot Sanger Katz, and it's for the New York Times. And what it says is, it says, on abortion law, the U.S. is different from most, meaning that we have less restriction on abortion right now than almost any other country on earth. I mean, literally, than anywhere. They write in the New York Times, a few countries allow abortion without restriction until fetal viability, as we do. The cutoff set by Roe v. Wade was fetal viability. In other words, can the baby survive outside the womb? Which was decided 49 years ago, Saturday. Because of medical advances, that is now around 23 weeks. In other words, in most countries around the world, in virtually all of them, they ban abortion after 23 weeks. And only around a dozen other countries allow abortion for any reason beyond 15 weeks of pregnancy. In other words, that law that they're debating in Mississippi, that allowed 15 weeks. 15 weeks, you keep the abortion law you have. They can't, government can't interfere with the first 15 weeks. But after that, no. And that's for countries around the world. It's an extraordinary thing. The under the status quo, abortion access is still out of reach for many in the United States, said Risa Kaufman, who's director of U.S. Human Rights at the Center for Reproductive Rights, which fights abortion restrictions in American courts and tracks international trends. That is in contrast to many countries, including Western Europe, that provide access to subsidized, fully funded abortion services. In other words, what they are saying is the sense in which the U.S. is less pro-abortion, it's only because we don't finance it. But we also don't ban it. If the court overturns Roe, more than 20 states are expected to ban or severely limit abortion at stages of pregnancy after 15 weeks, just like other countries in the world do. And what's interesting here is the difference with a lot of countries you wouldn't expect. Other countries who allow exceptions after 12 weeks, but they are less broad. They're talking about the exceptions in Germany. In France, for instance, the exceptions to allow abortion after 15 weeks are only to prevent serious health issues or death. In other words, France has the Mississippi law. They do. It's virtually the same law. In the United States, about 8% of abortions happen after 13 weeks. So, again, when people talk about, oh, how terrible, everything's going to change in America, we're going to be eliminating abortions, we won't if they rule that the Mississippi law is constitutional and does not violate something that was never written in the Constitution or contemplated by the Constitution, that we would have abortion laws that are similar to most of Europe, virtually all of Europe, and France. In much of Europe, abortion laws may be more permissive than they appear on paper, but in other parts of the world, there is less access to abortion than the law permits. And they go on to talk about the overwhelming majority of all nations on Earth, which actually are more restrictive of abortion than we are. We'll be right back. One story we didn't get to last week, and I wanted to, but sometimes stuff builds up and you can't touch everything. Was a story of the moronic move by the city of New York and the New York Museum of Natural History to remove and to send out to North Dakota. I guess that's kind of an exile. They moved Theodore Roosevelt, who was the only president of the United States who was actually born in New York City, and he was, and his family lived in Manhattan. And they removed his statue from in front of the New York Natural History Museum that his father, as Theodore Roosevelt Sr., helped to found. It's so awful because Theodore Roosevelt is a great president and so perfectly exemplified so much about the American character that Americans are proud of. And justly so. And it's a great time with Theodore Roosevelt being trying to consign him to the dustbin of history to go ahead and enjoy some of the tremendous excitement and emotion that you feel when you listen to this guy's life story. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about our special story about the Rough Rider, about Theodore Roosevelt. He didn't like the nickname Teddy. and preferred Theodore. And Theodore Roosevelt, president, governor, secretary of the Navy, historical scholar, naturalist, war hero, unbelievably fortunate officer who led this most remarkable military mission up a hill into the fire of the enemy. In any event, the story and the story of Theodore Roosevelt's family life, which is both tragic and inspiring, it's all there in our special history program on Theodore Roosevelt. The All-American Boy is the subtitle. It's available from our history store. You can join us. You can order that download. Or you can order it on CD, but if you want it free to just stream whenever you want to, just join us as a MedHead Plus member. It comes out to 22 cents a month, a week. A week? Is it a week? It's a week. Actually, it's a day. 22 cents a day is what it costs, but it's still a pretty modest amount of money. Because you can get one of our history programs on any day you want. So that comes to your 22 cents. Check it out at michaelmedved.com or go to medvedhistorystore.com. It's still, you get a lot, you pay very little. Okay, speaking of paying very little, people are used to paying and they love M&Ms. And now Mars Incorporated, the country behind the colorful candy, are announcing a global commitment to creating a world where everyone feels they belong and society is inclusive. As part of the new mission to increase the sense of belonging for 10 million people around the world by 2025, Mars said the M&M's characters, who serve as mascots of sorts for the brand, would be receiving fresh new looks. This is Jane Huang, who's global vice president of M&M's, explaining what's going on. Clip 7A.
The power of fun is the most important way that we can help people feel included and increase that sense of belonging. So as an iconic brand that's been around for actually over 80 years, it's really important that we're evolving over time as well. And one of the most powerful ways we can do that is through our beloved characters. You'll see them as we've done a deep look at them both inside as well as out in terms of reflecting new looks, personalities, and backstories. For example, Green, you'll see her better reflect empowerment and confidence and be known for more than just her shoes. You're going to see Green and Brown together being a supporting force for women who are throwing shine and not shade.
Green and Brown throwing shine and not shade. There's more. What does Orange embrace? Listen.
You'll also see Orange really embrace his true self, worries himself and all, and not be afraid to express it. We actually know Orange is the most relatable of our characters in the crew. It's based on some conversations we've had with Gen Z, which we know is the most anxious generation. And beyond our characters, you'll see things such as our increased color palette, as well as the different sizes and shapes of our lentils. And a personal favorite of mine, more of an emphasis on the ampersand. It's a distinctive element of the M&M's logo that connects the two M's together. And it's really a signal of our belief as a brand that we are better together.
Better together was Hillary Clinton's campaign slogan. I think what this is critical race theory. Why? Don't jump. It makes sense. Listen, it's critical race theory because the essence of critical race theory is all you need to know about somebody is his race or her race. And you know, based on that, whether somebody should feel guilty or somebody should feel proud. Everything is identified by color. And that's what they do. They claim here that green is fundamentally different and even wears different clothes than orange. I don't know if they're blue M&Ms. But isn't it basing everything on color a little bit problematic? The as one of the world's most iconic candy brands, Catherine Slate, Mars Wrigley's chief growth officer, said in a statement, who better to commit to a world with more moments of fun by increasing a sense of belonging around the globe than M&Ms? And one of the big things here that people are objecting to is they are changing green. The green M&M had worn sort of go-go boots, white go-go boots that were pretty slick, and now they're going to be doing Snickers. A regular bag of M&Ms has all the classic colors, red, orange, green, blue, yellow, and dark brown. They're available in any grocery store, and you can make a lot of fun desserts just by separating the colors in a traditional bag of M&Ms. In other words, they start all together, and then you impose segregation. Isn't there something like that? Okay, with M&M solving racism and providing a more inclusive environment, time to actually watch a film, which is pretty darn good, which gives some useful background about a world hurtling toward war. We're not talking about the Ukraine, but it's very relevant to that situation. Movie is called Munich, The Edge of War. It's on Netflix, and it's unmissable. Listen.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minutes.
Two close friends at Oxford in the 1930s, one German and one British, meet again at the fateful Munich Conference in 1938 in an utterly gripping and masterfully crafted historical thriller called Munich, The Edge of War, now streaming on Netflix.
Paul von Hartmann, he has a document in his possession. I'd like you to go to Munich and get the document.
It'll be an act of espionage on foreign soil.
The main character given that dangerous assignment is played by George MacKay, with the same depth and conviction he brought to his part in 1917. Jeremy Irons is also outstanding, Oscar-worthy, in fact, playing Neville Chamberlain, and the breathless timing, masterful script, and emotional impact with Ulrich Mattes as a truly chilling screen Hitler make this one of the very best films so far in 2022. Rated PG-13 for brief violence and consistent tension. 4 stars for Munich, The Edge of War, which reaches the edge of greatness. And on the Michael Medved Show tomorrow, there's been an announcement by a group called the Satanic Temple that they're going to be hosting a after-school Satan club in an Ohio elementary school. What's the point, you may ask? Well, the point is, of course, to try to get attention to their fringe group. But we will cover the legal ramifications. Not all parents are happy with an after-school Satan club. And affirmative action appears to be doomed. So says liberal legal scholar Noah Feldman. And I say, hooray. We'll also be talking about the last anniversary of Roe v. Wade, looming Supreme Court decisions that could fundamentally alter the American pattern for abortion rights. What does it really mean? What does it mean for the ordinary Americans or for the Constitution of this greatest nation on God's green earth?